It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Good morning. Welcome to the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher. Now, you know, when I came in this morning, I was going to go, okay, got to talk men's Final Four. Got to talk the men's Final Four. Then this happens. And if my producer is working with me, then there we go. Okay, live radio, got to love it. Anyway, it's early in the morning. Speaking of early in the morning, you know what? We're going to talk about what happened in women's basketball in just a bit, but I want to go straight to the phones because it is time for the Final Four in Phoenix. So we're going to go straight to Phoenix and talk to Jackson Cowart with the Daily Tar Heel. Yes, the Daily Tar Heel. That's got to be the North Carolina paper. How you doing this morning, Jackson?
I'm doing good, Professor. I think that that shot that South Carolina or Mississippi State shot might be more exciting than anything we see in the men's Final Four.
I agree with you. I mean, because we just saw a 111 game win streak go down the drain last night, and one of your possible championship opponents is in the championship of the women's game, and that's going to be South Carolina taking on Mississippi State. You know, if I would have told you 6 months ago that there's going to be an SEC team that has a chance to win the men's and women's, you'd be at a loss to figure out who, because Kentucky women never good. And you'd be going, okay, who's going to do it? But South Carolina, if you said South Carolina in the Final Four of both, you'd at the start of the season, you'd be a rich man if you were in Vegas. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I still can't believe that South Carolina is potentially going to be in the men's championship game. But, obviously they'd have to get through Gonzaga first, but North Carolina-South Carolina matchup is something that would be incredibly intriguing, I think, for a lot of people on the East Coast.
It'd be intriguing for people in the Carolinas. I mean,
yeah.
because honestly, let's think about this, Jackson. South Carolina, North Carolina, yes, it'd be a great game because you got SEC, ACC, you've got a blue blood for versus Frank Martin. But before we get there, we've got to talk about Oregon. Now, If you took the North Carolina program from 3 years ago and the Oregon program from 3 years ago, this is no matchup whatsoever. I mean, Oregon had just lost three starters due to a alleged sexual assault, two other players for shoplifting. They had three scholarship players going into the season 3 years ago, made the CBI, NIT last year, now in the Final Four. Let's talk about your opponent and how they got there. What did you see in the Kansas game that kind of scares you for North Carolina tonight?
I mean, obviously the thing that stuck out in the Kansas game is Jordan Bell. And I personally, I grew up an Oregon fan for 18 years. So I've been following this team probably more than I should. And when Chris Boucher went out, I definitely thought that Oregon had little to no shot of getting where they are now. But you look at the way that Jordan Bell played against Kansas, the way that he's played throughout the tournament, that's something that could give UNC trouble, because UNC's stable of big men in the front court, Kennedy Meeks, Isaiah Hicks, even Luke May as of late, that's what gives them an advantage over nearly any team they play. But when you have a guy like Bell that can kind of shut down the paint, that could be something that give UNC trouble and force them to shoot from the outside. And North Carolina, the past 2 years really, has shown that when they have to shoot from the outside, sometimes that can be their undoing.
Now, okay, you were talking about Oregon, how you followed them. Now, we got to throw this disclaimer out. You're from Oregon, aren't you?
Yeah. Lived in Oregon for 18 years. Lived in Eugene. My mom graduated from University of Oregon. So definitely probably not the most unbiased game for me to be covering.
Because when we first touched base, I'm sitting there going, I thought I'd called the wrong number, because I was going, okay, an Oregon number's coming up. And you said you're with North Carolina. And I was going, come on now. And you told me that, and I was going, wow. Now, you talked about Luke May. That shot he hit against Kentucky this past weekend, I mean, were you at the game, or were you in Memphis, or were you back in Chapel Hill?
I was at the game. I was probably about 30 feet from where Luke May took off.
And describe the reaction of all the people around you. Were you with the press people, or were you with Carolina people?
No, I was on press row.
You're on press row. Okay, well, talk about how campus reacted this last week because of that shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people outside of Chapel Hill realize that Luke May, before that game, maybe before the game before, was the ninth option for UNC. I mean, this is a guy who fans loved him. He was a fan favorite, but when the ball was in his hands, people more or less would cringe. I mean, they didn't know what to expect when Luke May got it. So when Luke May gets the ball with a berth to the Final Four on the line, it's not what people wanted. I mean, there were two players even lower in the depth chart than him who probably are more likely to take that shot. But now, I mean, people are hoping that Luke May starts. He's a hero. They hope that he takes every shot. The video of him going to his 8 a.m. blew up, and people love Luke May. There's shirts with him, bad and bushy, his eyebrows on a basketball. I mean, he'll be a legend for as long as I'm alive, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, not to bring up your neighbor they're 14 miles away, not to bring up Duke, but it, you know, especially since you were playing Kentucky, it brings back the Leitner shot almost.
Mm-hmm.
And, we know that Kentucky people still hate Leitner. So are we looking at 20, 30 years from now, people still hating Luke May? Probably. But, you know, because that Kentucky team that Leitner beat was actually a seasoned team instead of these one-and-done kids. And we'll talk about mm-hmm. that in a second because you're going to be seeing some of those at Carolina, and you do see them at Carolina. I mean, I think that's when I got used to it, was seeing people like Stackhouse and everybody leave Carolina early. I mean, because Jordan left a year early, but it's not like these people are playing one and gone. I hate that. I know you went to school for an education. I wish the athletes would go for an education, and it really ticks me off. Okay, now let's talk about Carolina's run other than the Kentucky game. Carolina, I know I had them all the way through to the championship game on my bracket, which is like that's the only game I have left remaining on my bracket that could possibly take place. But let's talk about their run from the get-go. I mean, because coming out of the ACC tournament, you had to feel, okay, yeah, we're a number one seed. Yeah, we just lost to Duke again. What was the mindset of the team going into the tournament after the ACC performance?
I mean, there was definitely that frustration/hunger losing in the second round. That's not what UNC expected. They won the ACC tournament last year, and especially to lose to Duke and the way they did, kind of just letting it slip away. You definitely felt in the locker room after that Duke loss that, okay, this isn't the main prize, but we're hungry and we're angry and we're going to come out and show that we're better than this. And they definitely, that first game against Texas Southern, granted, Texas Southern disclaimer, but they looked like one of the better teams in the tournament after that win. And then they go and they play Arkansas, and I thought it was over. I thought with 3 minutes left that game was over, UNC's season was over, and that it would be a massive disappointment. And then they go on a 12-0 run, and then they play Butler, and early in that game they go on a 12-0 run, and they more or less blow out Butler. It got close late, but that wasn't really close. And then Kentucky, it looks like they're down five and could be out. They go on another 12-0 run. This is a team that just seems like when they're on the edge of their season being over, they're not going down. And it makes me think that I don't know what situation they're going to be confronted with where they're not going to come back in that same fashion.
Well, now let's talk about your coach for a second, because I'm not an expert on Roy Williams, but I'm well acquainted with him because I'm a Big 12 guy, so I got to know him and got to hate him when he was at Kansas before he went over and, you know, assumed the reins. He wasn't the first coach after the dean, but, you know, he did assume the reins of the program because, you know, hometown boy coming home, you know, he's a Carolina guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is this one... I think this is one of his better coaching jobs because it doesn't have, yeah, you know, he's got, you've got Barry, you've got all the other people on the team that are, you know, are the big stars, but it's not the lineup that you're looking at four or five McDonald's All-Americans on your starting five. It's a different team that Roy's put together this time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you don't have Justin Jackson. I mean, I don't want to take any credit away from him. He has been exceptional this year. But even last year's team, Bryce Johnson was just an absolute force of nature. You go back to that 2009 team that I Hansbro, 2005 team, it seemed like it was stacked across the board. This team is not an NBA talent team. And you see that, you know, when Joel Berry is out, this team struggles a lot. When Justin Jackson is out, this team can't really find its rhythm. But he's found a way to find the lineups, to make the decisions that keeps them alive. You want to talk about the Arkansas game when they're down by five. He called a timeout just before, and whatever he told them stuck with the players and resonated. And that's, I mean, the way that you coach in timeouts is just as important as any other situation. That Kentucky game, he calls a timeout, and he goes to a zone defense and stifles Kentucky. He puts in Luke May near the end, and it stretched UNC's offense, and obviously we all know what Luke May did. So even this whole season, he's done a great job of keeping UNC afloat, playing some of the backups throughout the year so that they're ready for tournament time. Luke May is ready. Seventh Woods is hopefully ready for UNC fans. I mean, guys like that. But then even these in-game tactics that he's had, he didn't call a timeout at the end of the Kentucky game. People like to give him a hard time about that, but not calling a timeout is one of the reasons they won that game. So it kind of the Roy Williams coaching staples have come through this season, and you're seeing the fruition of it. UNC is in the Final Four because of it.
Now, the biggest question that everybody has about Carolina right now is, can Joel Berry walk right now? I mean, because has Roy Williams let him out of a wheelchair this week? Because in a 24-hour span, he sprains both ankles, only shot 25% of the from the field against Kentucky. How is Berry's health, and can he go 4-for-12 against Oregon tonight and Carolina win?
Yeah, I mean, he said yesterday that Berry said that he was at 85%, which, I mean, I think you just take away 15% knowing that players have more confidence in themselves than their bodies probably allow. He'll definitely play. The issue with him is less his quickness. I mean, Kentucky, he looked quick and he looked fast, but he can't get his footing on those jump shots, and you've seen it. He's not shot well in this tournament at all. And I think that the last two games that UNC played against Duke really showed the Jekyll and Hyde of when Joel Berry is good, like he was in the regular season against Duke, UNC is nearly unbeatable. And when he's bad or when he's not playing, like in the ACC tournament, UNC is very, very beatable. I think that he can be hobbled tonight and UNC still has a shot against Oregon. I think they have mismatches at a lot of different positions that the Ducks are going to have a tough time keeping up with. But we've seen throughout the season when Berry looks rough, this team looks rough, and it's not just his shooting, it's not just his passing, it's his presence on the court. And like you said, I mean, we really don't know how well he can even walk. I mean, flying on the plane, Roy Williams wouldn't stop talking about how his ankles would swell up. And Joel Berry is definitely not as healthy as that he's been this year. But I think that hopefully for UNC, they'll be able to limp by without him, even if he's not really that ready to go.
Okay. Now I've got a last question for you. You're in Phoenix, going to be watching it there. Now, if you were in Chapel Hill, which you're never able to go watch a game, you know, with friends because you're always covering the games, but Where's the best place in Chapel Hill to go enjoy a beverage and watch the Tar Heels?
Man, I got to give a shout-out to Four Corners. They have me hooked. They got a 50% off after 10 every normal night, so they bring you in that way. Game day, it's regular price, but you don't even care. They got TVs lined. It's right next to Franklin Street, so if UNC wins, you can just go ahead and rush Franklin. If you feel like you got $20, even $30 to kill, top of the hill is the best view in Chapel Hill. You can see from the balcony, you can see all the fire on Franklin Street. You can see all the people rushing like ants, the street signs being torn down.
Yeah, but Jackson,
top of the hill is the traditional one.
Jackson, what college student has $20, $30 to blow? We know that.
Thing. That's why Four Corners is my
exactly.
Play. Yeah.
Jackson, real quickly, who wins tonight?
You know, I mean,
both games. I've got about 20 seconds.
What's that?
I've got about 20 seconds. Give me both games real quick, one word on each.
I think UNC has a length advantage against Oregon. It's going to be tough for the Ducks to win. I think UNC wins that. I think South Carolina is looking great right now, but Gonzaga, too much size. And I think that title game would be something to watch.
Thank you, Jackson. That's Jackson Cowart with the Daily Tar Heel as we go back to Phoenix next as we talk to Oregon. You're listening to University of Fish right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
This is Mayor John Southers, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. I am the Professor Tim Fisher,
And now we've talked to North Carolina, so now we go back to Phoenix, and we're going to talk to Oregon now. Talking to Jared Denny with the Daily Emerald, the school paper there at the University of Oregon. How you doing today, Jared?
Hey, I'm good, Tim. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
Doing good. Are you excited about tonight?
I am, man. It's going to be a different kind of experience. It's obviously a huge event, and being out here in Phoenix, you see how huge it really is. And kind of, we're here at the Dome right now. We just actually did it. Yesterday was the first day that teams were able to practice kind of to the public. So it's definitely a different thing to see, but yeah, it's pretty crazy out here.
Let's talk about how the Ducks got there. Now, 2.5 years ago, you'd never thought this was possible. I mean, because the whole program was in turmoil. You know, you had the three people that were dismissed from the team, an alleged sexual assault. Then you had two other players that were cited for shoplifting, and only had three scholarship players from the year before. And then in a few years, you've turned it around from CBI, NIT, and now the Final Four. How has Dana Altman done this?
Yeah, it's been a pretty incredible thing to watch. And I mean, if you go back to that year, they only had three scholarship players on their roster who had played Division I basketball before, and then obviously they brought in a giant class of freshmen with Jordan Bell and Casey Benson and Dylan Brooks and guys who have been the key behind this year's team. But at that point, 2.5 years ago, nobody really thought. I mean, they were picked to finish, I think, eighth in the Pac-12. Joe Young ends up kind of going crazy throughout that entire year, winning Pac-12 Player of the Year and really drag that team to the top. But it's been, watching it kind of build up, it's been a steady thing, you know. And then you have last year, Dylan Brooks kind of breaks out as this emerging star player and had the controversy or whatever with Coach K and everything in the tournament, but he really turned into a legit one of the better scorers in the nation. And you bring in guys like Tyler Dorsey, who is, everybody has kind of seen him burst onto the scene and have all these three-point shooting outbursts during this tournament, but he was a top 20, top 30 recruit coming in last year, so there's a lot of people who are excited about him. And then the junior college connection with Altman has really kind of helped the Ducks along as well, with Chris Boucher, who's unfortunately out for the rest of this year, but he's been such a huge key to what Oregon has done these last 2 years. So it's been, I shouldn't say it's been surprising, but it has been kind of a steady thing to watch build up, you know.
Okay, now you brought up Boucher. Boucher's missing for the rest of the tournament, as you mentioned. So Jordan Bell is getting all Dikembe Mutombo on everybody right now, just blocking everything that comes his way. How is he going to do that against the North Carolina Bigs?
Yeah, and that's the thing that he's been asked probably 100 times this week, is how do you handle Kennedy Meeks and Isaiah Hicks and some really, really talented big guys. And I don't know if he really hasn't faced anything like that this year. And, I mean, the numbers say it all. North Carolina is the best rebounding team in the country, and Oregon has really played only Boucher and Bell at that big man spot this year. And they have Cavell Bibby-Williams, who is a really talented, really strong, sturdy post off the bench, but he just never really had that much time this year. So kind of throwing him into the mix is going to be hard for the Ducks to pull that off. But if I had kind of talking to some of the UNC guys this week, they've definitely alluded to the fact that they are going to take it right at Bell and try to get him in foul trouble, because Oregon really doesn't have much of a post presence once they have to go to the bench.
Especially with Boucher out. Now, let's talk about this past weekend, because nobody gave you a chance against Kansas in Kansas City. I don't think that Kansas had ever lost a tournament game in Kansas City before this past weekend. How did the Ducks pull it off?
Yeah, I think a lot of it starts with, like I said earlier, Tyler Dorsey is shooting out of his mind right now. And it's funny, I asked Justin Jackson yesterday, how do you stop Tyler Dorsey? And he said, don't let him get the ball, because that really is the only way to slow him down right now. It's pretty impressive what he's been doing from beyond the arc. But, I mean, you saw it with Oregon last week, just watching them kind of, you thought at some point Kansas was going to cut into it, and they sort of did there late in the second half when Oregon sort of ran out of gas. But once again, you go back to Dorsey, and it's Kansas cuts it to six. Bell gets a timely offensive rebound, kicks it back out to Dorsey, and sure enough, I mean, that's lights out. And I think a lot of people thought that was a bad matchup for Oregon, but with the type of bigs that Kansas was rolling out with Landon Lucas, and I mean, who's a great player, but they didn't really have anybody who was going to go to the block and try to take it to Bell. They have a lot of kind of pop-out-and-shoot-the-three sort of big, so that really played in Oregon's favor. And then when they're playing that four-out sort of offense, and just going right at the rim, Bell's going to do what he's been doing because he's just kind of he's been on that tear lately. So I don't think it was, for me at least, it wasn't it's quite as surprising of a thing just because of the matchup, you know. I think North Carolina is a much tougher matchup for Oregon.
I probably agree with you, especially with the size down low for the Tar Heels. Let's focus more on the game tonight. You're taking on North Carolina. How do you see this game going? Best case scenario, and we obviously know the worst case scenario, but what's the best case scenario tonight?
I think the best case scenario for Oregon is if they get Peyton Pritchard, their freshman point guard, going early. I think that's going to be a huge key with him getting the basket, which he's done a really strong job of this year. But you're facing guys like Joel Berry, who has said he's going to play hell or high water at this point. So it's kind of a whole new world, I think, for him. And then I think best case, Belkey's blocking shots. He doesn't get in foul trouble early. He's able to stay on the floor. Digby Williams comes in, gives you some solid minutes. And Taylor Dorsey manages to keep doing what he's been doing. And it's going to be a lot harder for him because he's a marked man at this point, and nobody's going to let him kind of just run off screens like he has been. But I think the ultimate key for Oregon is you have to get Dylan Brooks going. He's had an okay tournament. He had an okay performance against Kansas, but he hasn't been the Pac-12 player of the year throughout this tournament. He's kind of faded to that backseat, and Dorsey's kind of carried the scoring load. I think if Dylan Brooks is going, he's going to create a matchup nightmare because if North Carolina wants to roll out those two posts, one of them has to guard Dylan Brooks, and then he's going to have the perimeter. So I think that is maybe the matchup to watch. If Brooks can exploit that mismatch when North Carolina does have two big guys on the floor, then I think that's going to go really well for Oregon.
Okay, are you willing to throw out a prediction for tonight's game?
If I was betting on it, I would pick North Carolina just because they are such a talented team, and I think the rebounding thing, I mean, North Carolina is so much better at rebounding the basketball than every other team in the country, and that's something that, especially without Boucher, Oregon just hasn't done that well. Throughout the tournament, their guards have definitely kind of stepped up in the rebounding department, but I think the rebounding thing is going to be a little too much to overcome tonight.
Okay, so we'll go with that. We'll hope, you know, for you, I hope the Ducks do win. But let's look at the other side of the bracket. No matter who wins tonight, who will they be facing on the other side of the bracket in the Gonzaga, South Carolina game?
I'm going with Gonzaga. I think, I mean, a lot of people don't see Gonzaga to play their game super late, but this is the best team that Mark Few has ever had, and it's not even really close. Just with the talent they have, Zach Collins is going to be a first-round NBA draft pick at some point whenever he goes. Nigel Williams-Goss is a tremendous talent, one of the better point guards in the nation, and they're just so deep at every position. I mean, what South Carolina has been doing is fantastic, but I've kind of said all along that Gonzaga is one of the maybe two or three deepest teams in this tournament. It's really showed so far. I think, I mean, if Williams-Goss isn't going, then you go to Collins in the post. I mean, they just have so many options, and I think that's going to be hard for anybody to stop, let alone South Carolina, but it's going to be a really, really interesting thing to see.
Now, I've got a question for you. You're in Phoenix, of course, but all your friends back in Eugene, if they had to pick somewhere to go watch the game that served maybe a young adult beverage, I mean, we can't say adult beverage, we're talking about college kids, but where would they go? Where's the best place in Eugene to go watch the Ducks?
Oh, you got to go to Rennie's. It's a bar and grill on 13th Avenue, right by University. It's definitely, for my money, by far the best sports bar on campus. It's just kind of a nice, relaxed environment. I wouldn't say it's the most popular spot, but as far as going down, sitting, and just having a drink and watching the game, I don't think there's anywhere comparable to that.
Well, Jared, I want to thank you for joining us. Hopefully we get to talk to you next week after we talk about a Duck National Championship. Granted, it hasn't happened since before television was invented, but we could.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to do it.
So we've talked to North Carolina. We've talked to Oregon. We've got half the Final Four knocked out. When we come back here on University of Fish, we will be talking to, of course, who do we have left? We've got South Carolina left, and we have Gonzaga. We heard from Gonzaga last week. We're going to hear from him again this week. Eden Lossie is turning into a regular on the University of Fish. We'll talk to her from Gonzaga, and we've got our friend Abe Danaher from South Carolina coming up just after the break. And also the biggest news in college basketball coming up next on University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Inbound goes to Dillingham, who dribbles up. Chong face guards against Morgan Williams. Dillingham gets it across. 7 seconds. Dillingham near right. 5 seconds. Dillingham to Morgan Williams. 3 seconds from the top of the key. Drives right of the lane. Jumper is good! And Mississippi State wins! The Bulldogs storm the floor as they shock Connecticut! One of the biggest upsets in women's college basketball history! 66-64!
Welcome back to the University of Fish. Yes, that happened last night. 111 games down the drain. Yeah, they did get a few national championships along the way, but not one this year. A team that could get two national championships this year. Got to be one of the hardest working people in sports journalism right now, especially college sports journalism. Abe Danaher, live from Columbia, South Carolina. He didn't make the trip to Phoenix. You know why? He's got to work the sports desk because South Carolina has the men and women in the Final Four. Not only the women in the Final Four, they're in the championship game Monday night. Abe, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
A busy day in Columbia, isn't it?
Definitely a busy day.
I mean, I remember talking to you earlier this week, and you're saying, I might not be making it to Phoenix, and now I'm thinking about it, and I was going, I understand why, because the sports crew has got to be spread thin, because you've got some in Dallas, you've got some in Phoenix, and then you're back home in Columbia. Let's real quickly talk about the matchup Monday night. I'm throwing you a curveball here, because I said we're going to talk about the Final Four. We're going to talk about the Final Four, but just women's real quickly. With UConn out of the way, that one would think with the year that the South Carolina, the Lady Gamecocks have had, that you could be looking at a national championship Monday night.
I know that when I heard that UConn went down, that was the first thing that came to my mind. I know we've beaten Mississippi State once this year, a great game, but even between then and now, this women's team is completely different. Losing Coach and having Davis really step up here at the end of the season. We're playing a lot smaller, and we're really a completely different team, and I think we have a good shot at winning it.
I think you do, too. I mean, I know South Carolina. I've been watching South Carolina women's basketball, their progression all year, and they've looked great. And if you'd have told me 6 months ago we'd be talking right now about the South Carolina men in the Final Four and the women in the championship game, people would have thought you were nuts. I think people in Columbia would have thought you were nuts, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they could have believed the women. I don't know about the men.
Now, okay, let's talk about the men, because first off, you have one of the fieriest coaches in college basketball, and I've got to play a little bit of Frank for you because everybody had their little press conferences this week on Media Day. Here's Frank.
We never once have we ever spoken about, well, this opponent is this or that guy's real good. We speak about what we have to do to win. That's what we talk about every single day. I said, don't be the guy that doesn't do their job to prevent us from having an opportunity of staying here until Monday night.
And I think they could stay till Monday night because it's a Gonzaga matchup. Let's talk about the Gonzaga matchup, and then we'll talk about how the Gamecocks got here. But how do you see the matchup? Let's go down low, because you got Karnowski. And Karnowski, and it's not just him. You got the freshman that's playing really well. I think Miller, isn't that his last name? It's slipping my mind right now. But he is playing lights out whenever Karnowski's not on the floor. How do the bigs of South Carolina match up against Gonzaga?
I think that it's a dangerous matchup. Watching the tape on Gonzaga, their big men are really good, but they can pass. And that's not a good combination, especially with the three-point shooters they have surrounding them. Our big men, though, have really come along here, especially in the postseason. I mean, Mike Kotsar hit arguably the biggest shot of last game when he hit a jumper from the foul line with about a little under a minute left. And he scored, I think, 8 points. He looked real good down low. And with Chris Silva on the floor, South Carolina is a different team. He's our other big man. He struggled a lot with foul trouble. But when he stays in the game, South Carolina this year is 23-3, and when he fouls out, they're 3-7. So yeah. I think that really shows the impact he has on both ends of the floor. He can, on offense, he's energy, he's rebounding, and on defense, he's a shot blocker. He's really a game changer.
He really is. And when you look at the defense that Frank Martin has the Gamecocks playing right now, about 25% of the time, they're forcing a turnover. And they're averaging about 20 points a game off of turnovers, which is number two in the nation. And if they can get Gonzaga to turn the ball over, Mark Few has that team playing really tight and not turning the ball over a lot. But if they can force the turnovers, do you think that could be – I mean, of course it's going to be a big, big factor in the game. But do you think they can force those turnovers against Gonzaga?
I think that they can. I mean, looking at Gonzaga's schedule this year, I don't know if they've seen a defense quite like South Carolina's. I don't know if there is a defense quite like South Carolina's in the country. I know Gonzaga played Florida earlier in the season, and Florida is a defensive monster, but I still don't think that they played like South Carolina. So, I mean, that might weigh on the Gonzaga guards. South Carolina's picking up at half court. They're in your shorts. I mean, against Florida, Florida wasn't getting into their sets until like 10 seconds left on the shot clock sometimes. That can really affect the team.
Yeah. Now, okay, let's talk about the South Carolina's road to get to the Final Four. We've talked about what we've got to do against Gonzaga tonight. Let's talk about their journey there. What has been the pivotal game in the tournament? Obviously, this last game, you know, you'd say it was the most pivotal because it got us to where we were, but they had the road they had to use to get there. What do you think was the hardest game so far?
I think that Duke game was this postseason. The win over Duke got this whole school behind this team, and I think it made this team really say, like, we really deserve to be here. Because a lot of people expected South Carolina to beat Marquette, but I don't think anyone expected them to beat Duke.
I didn't.
Especially with Duke. You did?
No, I didn't. I mean, I had Duke, I had Duke in the championship against Carolina. North Carolina. I gotta differentiate when I'm talking to you.
I had Duke winning it all, so I can't say I was much better. But Duke was supposed to be the best team or one of the hottest teams coming into the game, and South Carolina manhandled them in that game. And I think that right there was the defining moment of this tournament.
Okay, I want to talk about your coach for a second because I'm well acquainted with Frank Martin. I'm a Big 12 guy from his days at Kansas State. I lived in North Central Kansas when he was at Kansas State. Everybody loved Frank Martin. But then you always had the people that like going, but how he yells at the kids. He's a fiery personality. I mean, but you also see the softer side of him when you have him, you know, when you have kids asking questions in the post-game press conferences. Tell us about your coach and what makes him so both enigmatic but so polarizing as well.
I think you just got to know where Frank Martin's coming from. Like, I think that every time he yells, it's with a purpose. I think that he knows what he needs to do to get his team where they need to be. And from his success, it's really shown that he can get the team there. I think Frank Martin's a guy you don't cross. You don't cross his players to him. I have one story this year where Frank Martin came to the press conference and told us the story afterwards. A fan came up to him and goes, Frank, I really like your team, but when are you going to play someone over Dwayne Notice? I'm getting sick of watching him miss shots. And then Dwayne Notice actually had one of his biggest games of the year, and Frank Martin stormed into the press conference. That was the first thing he told us was, look at my players. And this is what someone said to me before the game. I think that he's just a guy that cares that much about his team, cares that much about his players, and it may come out as screaming sometime, but I think he knows what it takes to get his team to where they need to be.
Okay, now this is the time that you have to put yourself on the line here. Who wins tonight between South Carolina and Gonzaga?
Oh, gosh. I hate to say what I'm going to say, but I think it's going to be Gonzaga. I think it's going to be a really close game. I see Gonzaga by around 7-9. I think they're just too balanced, and I think their guards will be able to handle the pressure. And Williams Goss is a really good player. I think he plays a lot like Sendarius Thornwell.
Okay.
But I think it's a good game.
Okay, so Carolina-Oregon, who wins?
I think Oregon. I think they're too hot right now. I think their guards are too good, and they just seem to have something about them right now.
So instead of a Carolina championship game, you're going a Pacific Northwest championship game.
Yes, I am. Much as it hates me to say.
Oh, I know. Luckily we air in Colorado Springs, and people in Carolina aren't hearing you say this. I mean, either one of them. But Here is one that I think that people will like what you answering. Carolina, Mississippi State, Monday night, Sunday night.
Carolina. We're bringing home the championship.
There you go. We got the ladies winning. So since you're in Columbia tonight, are you going to Little 5 Points? And if you go to Little 5 Points, where are you going to watch the game? Okay. I do have to throw a disclaimer out. People are going, Little 5 Points? What's that? Little 5 Points is an area in Columbia, South Carolina. A lot of bars, a lot of restaurants right off of campus. So, college bar you're going to tonight to watch the game?
I don't know if I'll be there, but the bar I would recommend where I say most students will be going is probably called Salty Nut. The Salty Nut. I know a lot of organizations have other bars rented out, but Salty Nut is packed for every game show. For every game, it's going to have a line out the door, and it's going to be crazy in there. So that's probably the place to go in Columbia.
Okay, so we got the Salty Nut to go to in Columbia. Abe, I do want to talk to you next week because we're going to have one of two things. We're going to have South Carolina making a great run through the Final Four, or we're going to have the Lady Gamecocks as national champion. Or could be both. But we'll talk this next week and find out. I want to thank Abe Danaher talking to us live from Columbia, South Carolina. Sorry you're not in Phoenix, but you got lots of work to do, brother.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Thanks. You've been listening to Abe Danaher from Columbia, South Carolina. I am the professor, Tim Fisher. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk to Gonzaga when we come back right here on University of Fish on Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Thought our teams, even back to 99, had shown they could compete if given the opportunity on national level. And then we followed up Sweet 16. I felt we were getting the type of players that we could compete on the national level. And all that time, we were staying nationally relevant. Maybe not for this particular weekend, but we were definitely first and second weekend type of program, which is pretty good.
Welcome back to the University of Fish, and I know our next person we're talking to knows that voice very well. I want to welcome Eden Lossie she is in Phoenix. We talked to her last week. She writes for the Gonzaga paper. Eden, you know that voice a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, I've heard it a couple times here and there.
Of course, I was head coach Mark Few of the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And Eden, thank you for joining us once again this week. We weren't sure last week if we're going to be talking, and we thought we would be. But, you know, Gonzaga did what they needed to do this past weekend in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And now they take on a South Carolina team that no one thought was going to be there. Let's talk about Gonzaga's run through the tournament. What has been the most pivotal game for you?
I think the game to me that showed really who Gonzaga is that West Virginia game. It was really gritty. It was really ugly, but they found a way to win. That's kind of what really good teams do here in March. I think Gonzaga has been a team that people have always thought was a little soft, the kind of team that doesn't play that much defense, that shoots a lot of threes, and that's about it. But that's not really the identity that Gonzaga's had this year, and they certainly showed that against West Virginia.
And they played some great defense in the tournament. I mean, because you look at a West Virginia team that scores a lot of points, and they held them to one of their lowest totals of the year. Because you're talking about people like Williams-Goss, you're talking about Karnowski, you're even talking the freshman, Mr. Collins. And what does this team have to do against Carolina tonight? Because Carolina can play some defense and make you turn the ball over.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Gonzaga is certainly going to have to take care of the ball. I think they're going to have to continue to play through their defense like they've been doing all season. They're also really going to have to D up on South Carolina's guards. I think this is an interesting matchup, particularly defensively, because they're two of the best defensive teams in the country, but they do it in very different ways. So like I said before, and I said the last time we talked, Gonzaga is going to play that defense through their big men by trying to funnel guards there and looking for blocks, whereas South Carolina's guards are really the ones who are going to D up hard and try and force Gonzaga to make mistakes. So it's kind of going to be a battle of the bigs, battle of the guards. And we'll see what happens.
And I think that Gonzaga does have the advantage when it comes to the battle of the bigs, especially with Karnowski down there in the low post. And Zach Collins has been playing so big in this tournament. He hasn't been logging a lot of minutes, but you can see the confidence that Mark Few has in Collins when he'll sit Karnowski early, and then the freshman just lights it up.
Yeah, definitely. He's had that kind of confidence in Collins all season, really. Zach Collins is the kind of guy who doesn't need to log a lot of minutes in order to be efficient. He can get, you know, quick, timely buckets when Gonzaga needs it. He can get big plays in the paint on defense. So that's a guy that Few really has no problem going to at any point in the game. And he showed that against West Virginia. He put him in at the end when Karnowski wasn't playing very well. He played for most of the stretch at the end of that game. And also another guy that he has a lot of confidence in the post is Killian Tilly. He doesn't get as many points as Collins, isn't quite as flashy, but he goes in and gives a really good defensive effort, and he can also get some timely buckets as well.
What is it going to take for Gonzaga to make it to Monday night?
I think the Zags just have to continue playing their game. They have to keep going into the paint, even if they struggle early. They've had some games where they haven't been able to get early buckets in the paint, and so they start to force outside, and that's when they really struggle. So they just have to kind of stick to their guns, use Karnowski, use Collins, use Tilly, use Jonathan Williams, and then sort of allow the rest of the game to just come to them.
Okay. Now, if the Bulldogs win tonight, who are they playing Monday night?
That's a tough call. I would say probably the advantage goes to North Carolina, strictly based on experience. But Oregon's playing really good basketball right now, and I would honestly love to see a West Coast final, so I'll be pulling for the Ducks. But I think Gonzaga can match up pretty well against either team.
You know who wouldn't want to see a Northwest final? And that's CBS. Because, I mean, it's going to be so regionalized for the ratings. They're going, hey, you've got Gonzaga and Oregon. So what is there, like a maybe, what, 180, 200 miles in between the two schools?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the distance, but it's pretty close. I think it's about a six-hour drive from Spokane.
Okay, I forget about about Spokane's there at the bottom of Puget, not closer to the river near Portland. But no, I mean it would be a very regionalized game. But then again, if the games go the other way, you're looking at South Carolina UNC, where those schools are only about 3.5-4 hours apart. So the best thing for ratings, obviously, would be one West Coast, one East Coast. That way you tie in the whole nation. But I'm kind of going with you. I like Gonzaga to beat South Carolina. Oregon, I've seen them play some great defense. I mean, how Dana Altman switches up that defense is just amazing, what he's doing with that team, especially since Boucher is hurt. And I think with Boucher being hurt, if Oregon does make it to the final, that pretty much writes a ticket to Gonzaga to win the national championship, because that depth down low is going to be hurting them, especially when you're talking about Karnowski and Collins. And like you said, Tilly as well. But I think that we're going to see Gonzaga and North Carolina, if that is the matchup. Tell me who wins Gonzaga-Oregon. Tell me who wins Gonzaga-North Carolina.
I'm going to probably sound like a little bit of homer here, but I'm going to have to go with Gonzaga in both contests.
Okay.
I think they're just a team that's really, really deep and is really well-rounded, and I think that's what's going to play out well for them here at the end of the season.
Now, the question I have, I mean, because I know you're in Phoenix this weekend.
Uh-huh.
You were not at the you were in that Sweet 16 in the Elite Eight, but you were in Salt Lake City the week before for the opening rounds. Were you at Jack and Dan's last weekend?
I certainly was at Jack and Dan's. It was a really great atmosphere. Really cool. Lots of students there, but also a lot of people from the community. And towards the end of the game, because they had it locked up with about 10 minutes left, the place was just going insane. People are jumping around. I was hugging people I'd never met before. A really incredible atmosphere.
So you made a lot of new friends last weekend.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. Okay. Now, Eden, I want to thank you. I hope to be talking to you this next week. We'll see if we can make it the trifecta 3 weeks in a row, and we'll do that if Gonzaga wins. You know,
yeah,
that.
I hope to be talking
because,
to you as well.
You know, you're insignificant to me if Gonzaga loses. I mean, it's like, why do I talk to Eden again? Yeah, she's got the Colorado Springs tie since she was here at the Gazette last summer. But other than that, how's the softball team doing, baseball team? I mean, because maybe we can talk spring sports after that. Because, you know, if the Bulldogs lose, a lot of people are going to be looking at this as, well, you know what? It's Gonzaga. We didn't expect them to go very far. That's not the mindset of the team anymore, is it?
No, I don't think that's been the mindset of the team for a long time. I mean, you're looking at a team that's been in March Madness for 19 years straight. That's, you know, that's nothing to laugh at. That's a big deal. And they haven't been a Cinderella story. They haven't been a mid-major, quote-unquote, program for a long time. They've kind of been a program that, you know, gets the tournament every year and does pretty well. Granted, this is their first Final Four, but they've been to a couple Elite Eights. They've been to Sweet 16. So they've really become a tournament mainstay, and I think this is kind of just the final step for them to sort of become a big-time program.
Okay, other than conference play, what games in the regular season, so you're out of conference play, what games do you think set the stage for Gonzaga to be where they're at? I'm thinking the Arizona game.
I definitely think that Arizona game was big. I also think the Florida game was huge. They played Iowa State early in the season, and that was a big test for them. So they've certainly played some good teams, but I would agree that the Arizona matchup is probably the one that most people look to when they're looking to say, okay, well, who did Gonzaga play? And they can say, well, they played Arizona and they beat them. And Arizona's another great program.
Arizona's a great program. And with Florida making it as far as they did in the tournament, Iowa State had a nice showing in the tournament and a great run through the Big 12 tournament as well. So, I mean, everybody's like, well, you know what? Gonzaga's played St. Mary's and they beat them three times. It wasn't just St. Mary's that got Gonzaga there. I think it was, one, the grittiness of Coach Few, and two, I think he has the best entourage of players that he's had there ever in Mark Few's tenure there at Gonzaga. I think he has the best team he's ever had. And so, Eden, I do hope to be talking to you next week. I want to thank Eden Lossie for coming on this morning, live from Phoenix. She came on last week, so I let her sleep later than anybody else in Phoenix this morning because we've talked to everybody, and you and the North Carolina guy are the only ones that picked their school to win tonight.
Well,
they're the two number one seeds, so, you know,
it
makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense, yeah.
It does make sense, and even the Carolina guy thinks that he thinks he'll beat you. I should have had you guys on together to make a little bet between sports desks.
Well, I certainly think no matter who ends up playing, it's going to be a good matchup. That's just kind of how it is at this time of year.
It is going to be a great matchup. Eden, thanks for coming on the University of Fish. Hope to be talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a good one.
That was Eden Lossie from the Gonzaga Bulldog newspaper. I can't think of the name of it right offhand because it is early. I'm getting Phoenix disease here, so I got to give you my final picks now. Okay, Gonzaga, South Carolina, I think, like I just talked with Eden, I think the guys down low, when you talk Karnowski, you talk Collins, you talk Tilly, it's going to be too much for South Carolina to handle. Gonzaga's going to win that. North Carolina, Oregon, this is almost a toss-up. I would lean in favor of Oregon if Boucher was not hurt and they had more help down low to go against the bigs of North Carolina, but I don't think that Bell is going to be enough down low, even though he blocks any shot that comes towards him. I don't think it's going to be enough. I would go with the Tar Heels in that. So you have Tar Heels, Gonzaga, Monday night. You know, the blue blood of Carolina, you almost want to go with them. You almost want to go with them, but I am going to have to go with Gonzaga. It is their year. If it hadn't have been for BYU, they could have pulled off that perfect 39-0. But they're 36-1 right now, two games left. Let's see if they make it, and we'll find out next week. Next week, also, a Heisman Trophy winner right here on University of Fish. I am the professor. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300. See you next week. I don't feel dirty.